available in more homes than the Pac-12 Network, we are the Podcast of Champions. Fight! I'm David Woods from Bruin Report Online.
And here he goes, Miles Jack.
And I'm Ryan Abraham from USCFootball.com.
Liner, going to try to sneak it ahead. Touchdown, SC!
We are the Podcast of Champions. Welcome, everyone, back to the 2023 edition of the Podcast of Champions. New year, same us. I'm David Woods, Bruin Report Online, the UCLA site on the 24/7 Sports Network.
And I'm Ryan Abraham from USCFootball.com, the USC site on the 24/7 Sports Network. Happy New Year, everyone, and welcome to the Podcast of Champions, where we talk all things Pac-12 football. We're going to put a bow, kind of a disappointing bow, on the 2022 Podcast of Champions football season. No, the Conference of Champions football season. Finishing up 3-4 of the bowl games, David. The seven Pac-12 teams that went improvement. 0-7 the previous 2 years. Go to 3-4. That's a little better.
Yeah.
But, you know, it wasn't a great Monday.
If you take, like, the leads that they had in the last minute or so of some of these games, the Pac-12 did really well.
The expected win rate for some of those games
out of this world
was pretty high.
Especially frankly, those LA the scores. Math would tell you that you that that the Pac-12 did quite a bit better than 3-4 or whatever it was.
Right, but it's not the only math that counts is those numbers on that scoreboard at the end, and it wasn't a great finish.
Oh, but one of us finished well.
I'm sorry,
but one of us finished well.
True, yes. And that was a crazy one, too. We'll get to that with our picks against the spread and all of that. If you have any questions or comments for the show, podcast@uscfootball.com is not the email address. It's pac12podcast@gmail.com because I just did a Peristyle podcast right before this. Plus, David asked, when did you get in from the Cotton Bowl? This morning. So, yeah, I flew in, got in late last night.
And
so
boy, are your arms tired.
I will make sure that we have the right intro to this because we're doing this live simulcast. Yes, David, simulcast on our YouTube channel. So thanks to shout out to everyone that's in there watching us live. If you're watching on YouTube later on, appreciate that too on the replay. We got to get up to 1,000 subscribers on the YouTube channel. So share that, hit the little bell button so you can get notifications when we're going live because we'll keep doing this. We're going to keep doing the off season. We'll have an off season POC extravaganza of sorts. And yeah, but so make sure you check that out. And thank you for everyone that's watching us on YouTube. If you want to call or text us, you can send us a text or leave us a voicemail, 424-532-0678. You can tweet us at Pac-12 Podcast and go to our website, pac12podcast.com. You can find all of our content. Most importantly, we do love when you leave us a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts. You got that app? Give us a 5 stars, talk some trash to us, whatever you want to do. And we love to read them on the air no matter what you say about us, as long as it's a 5-star.
That's the most important thing. And we have two new 5-star reviews.
Okay.
5 stars. This is from Vishnu 21386. Ryan should be ignored. I used to like both hosts of this podcast and thought they both had great takes. Something was revealed in last week, though, that makes me seriously doubt anything Ryan Abraham has to say from now on.
Yes.
He did not appreciate the masterpiece that is Andor. This horrific take makes me think everyone should ignore everything he says from now on. If he makes a pick on a game, go the other way. He cannot be trusted.
Interesting. So, okay, I liked Andor, but I just was talked up that this was like, you know, as good as Empire Strikes Back or something, and I didn't feel like that was the case. Like, I thought it was fine.
It's very literally the best Star Wars property probably since the original trilogy.
Okay.
So yeah, best thing since Empire Strikes Back, not too hard to imagine. I truly do not understand what your complication with it could have been. However, you did describe the one of the like best episodes in the entire show as some prison break I don't care about.
That just seemed like out of nowhere. Like he's like looking around, he's like, now you get put in some random prison and there's like some, you know, I was like, all right. I mean, I don't know where that came from. I don't know what, you know. I mean, maybe I'll go watch it again. I enjoyed it, but I liked like the Mandalorian and stuff. I like that stuff better. Maybe I'm just more like connected to like the Boba Fett kind of characters and stuff. And
so you're actually the target for all the crap they've been putting out. Like, you want just like Skywalker shit forever. Like, you don't care at all. You just want, I want the same characters doing the same stuff forever.
I mean, this is like a prequel to a prequel, right? So it was like, there was one line in New Hope where they talk about these Bothan spies.
And then they do Rogue One.
The movie was really good. I like Rogue One. And now this is like, who was the guy that you know?
But the important thing about this show is that the character doesn't matter. Like, actually, the main character, Andor, is one of the least interesting characters in the show.
Yes.
It's all thematic. It's all surrounded around this like theme of, how do you fight back against an oppressive regime? How do you fight back against this sort of fascism? And, you know, who are these humans? Who are these fascists? Who are these efficient bureaucrats who, you know, make the guts of that operation sing, so to speak? That's the whole thing.
Yeah.
So Andor himself, he doesn't really matter. It's much more about like, okay, well, what would this kind of fascism look like? And there's a lot of, you know, some commentary on today's world as well.
Oh, God. Yeah. See, that's, I mean, that's what I don't want that.
It's
from my
really
Star Wars.
Good. It's really goddamn good.
Because it has commentary on today's world.
Not
and
just
about
because. No, it's
stuff?
Because like, it actually
that's
does
all
it.
I want from my
it
Star
does
Wars.
It well. It does it really well.
Okay. Whatever. All right. Well, sorry.
Stellan Skarsgård's character is out of this world. The speech where he's like, I burned my life. I do that like Johnny Moxon in Varsity Blues.
Yes.
Like, I don't want to burn my life. anyway, it's very good.
Okay.
Then we get another 5-star review.
Oh, good.
This is from Alan_I. 5 stars. Annoyingly entertaining. As a lifelong Trojan fan, it pains me to admit that I enjoyed David Woods' cleverness and sharp wit. Going forward, I would appreciate it if David would conform to my projected stereotype of UCLA fans and alumni. Please do my ego a favor and just be an insipid weirdo. Fight on. P.S. Utah fans might not be the most annoying fan base, but they're certainly the most insecure. In their heart of hearts, they must know they're a good but not great program.
Okay, well, thanks for the 5-star review. And when's the last time someone said something nice about you, David? Like, it's you know.
I mean, it's a real honor.
It's been a while.
Yep.
No, it's good. I you deserve some praise every once in a while. I mean, not a lot, but every once in a while.
No. Certainly.
Something.
No, it's bad for me.
Thank you for the reviews. We appreciate that. And I know we didn't do a show last week because it was all the vacation stuff, but we got to get to the remaining 5 bowl games. And we'll talk a little Pac-12 news, answer some questions. Do want to thank our sponsor, MyBookie. I hope you guys got to take advantage of the 12 days of giveaways that MyBookie did that ended on January 1st, but they still do their deposit bonus. If you want to get in there, use the promo code PAC12. You can get a deposit bonus up to $200, so go check that out. But promo code PAC12 over at MyBookie. Had a nice year there, which was nice and a lot of fun. Had a couple parlays, and it was funny trying to decide because I wanted the bowl picks. I had to just basically go. I went opposite just David just to see what he would, you know, to do. But I didn't do all my betting that way. So I did better on the betting. So the ones I agreed with you more. So I had a better, like, if I would have picked, that would have been better. So it was kind of a good week.
There's nothing ever but excuses from you for why you lose this thing. The only thing I ever
I've only lost once. So like,
you're like, oh, but my real picks, like the ones that I had in my heart of hearts. No, those were good.
No, I did. I made money on my bookie, which I love.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so let's see. What do we want to get to? We 3-4 in the bowls, like I said. 0-2 in the New Year's 6 bowls. You got USC and Utah. Didn't have a good showing on Monday, on January 2nd, the New Year's Bulls.
No. I turned the USC game off with about 4 minutes to go. They were up by 15. What are you talking about?
You would have been happy if you just turned that off. And then the short timers, the two LA schools, both with epic collapses. Which I'm not a big fan of that, like the FPI whatever, like percentage to win thing. But I think USC's was in the 99 something range, something like that. So we got those.
So USC is a little bit different. Just their post-game win expectancy, it was actually Tulane that was favored to win that game. But at one point, very late in the game, USC was favored to win that by 98%.
Right.
UCLA's post-game win expectancy, like meaning the underlying stats of the game taken as a whole at the end of the game, yeah. how often would you expect that team to win the game? It was 97.7%.
Crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah. So mm-hmm. we got that, but we got some good. There's some good. You get the Pacific Northwest. Good showing.
Yep.
The Ducks.
Yep.
The Huskies. Got high profile quarterbacks coming back all over the league. So we got some positive stuff, but you'd like to see the Pac-12 kind of end on a better note than it did. But 3-4, like I said, better than 0-7. We do have some breaking news to get to. And I forgot to grab a photo of this. But DJU, DJ Ungulale, I think you say
it. Is that what you're going with?
Well, I'll go with that. Transferring from Clemson to the Beavs. How long have we talked, David? Is all Oregon State needs is a quarterback. They got a quarterback.
They've got one who started a lot of games for a very good team. Now, do I think
is
he's
the right fit?
Do I think he's good? That's the question. I think there's a lot of talent there. I think he's still got a lot of arm talent. He's still a good athlete. There's all of that still there. But this is going to be an excavation project for Jonathan Smith. You know, you got to find, got to find the good parts and see if you can accentuate those. He had a lot of really poor performances for Clemson in the last couple of years. It seemed like the longer he spent in that system, the worse he got. And so maybe a change of scenery, going to a more friendly. I mean, this is a quarterback friendly offense up in Oregon State. You know, they lean on the running game. So there's not as many demands put on the quarterback. And he has turned guys who were certainly less talented than DJ into much better players than DJ has been in college. So yeah. I think it's a smart move for him. Go to a place where a guy has been very good at developing quarterbacks and even turning a guy like Ben Golbranson into, you know, competent enough by the end of the year.
True.
I think this could be a really good fit, and I'm rooting for it to work out. I think it'd be great for DJ. You know, once a guy has, like, you know, he was number one quarterback, I think, coming out of high school, that whole thing. And
yes.
his star has really fallen since then. Now it's like, well, you want to see him do well. Like, you really want to see it work out for him, because it's you don't want to wish that much disappointment on anyone. And right now, I think he's probably feeling quite a bit of that. So I'm hoping it works out. Oregon State, I think a lot of us out there, if you're not like an Oregon fan, you kind of root for them as like a secondary option a lot of times. So I think a lot of us are rooting for Oregon State.
Yeah, and just one little side note there, the Orange Bowl, which was very, very orange with Tennessee and Clemson. I forget. Was it Cole Klubnik or something like
yeah,
that? The new Clemson quarterback. Like, he didn't look that good in that one either. So, you know, you lose your offensive coordinator. You know, maybe it wasn't all DJ. You know, everyone thought the other, you know, Cole was going to be the savior, but he didn't look like a savior in the bowl game. So I don't know. So that's you get a talented quarterback going to a very talented play caller and quarterback coach. Maybe it's going to be a good fit, but another high-profile name in the Pac-12 as far as quarterbacks go. We got away from that for a little while. That was like kind of what all the Pac-12 was, and then sort of lost the quarterback thing too, and now getting it back.
Yep.
The transfer portal has been very helpful, some of the big names that are coming in there. So good on them. Another West Coast kid coming back home. I like that. And then Colorado, we got to talk about the
Colorado Buffalo.
They're cruton, baby.
Yeah, Dave put the notes in there. Two transfer class.
Yeah, number two overall transfer class, number 23 overall class right now. Mm-hmm. Deion Sanders has made his initial impact. And I don't think he's done. I think there's more to come. But Travis Hunter, he made the – I think this was after we last recorded. He made the – I think they tried to put a little bit of disguise around it, and he talked about Georgia, he talked about USC, he talked about a couple other schools, but in the end, he was following Deion wherever he was going.
Yep.
He is an elite cornerback. Everything I've ever heard about him, and apparently what he did at Jackson State a little bit, he would also be probably the number one receiver as well in his class. elite playmaker, the likes of which Colorado hasn't had in forever. But the whole transfer class is really impressive. I recommend taking a look at it when you get a chance. They got an impact tight end. They got obviously their starting quarterback for next year. They've got Jimmy Horn, who's an elite receiver. Marshawn Nealand, who was a coveted edge rusher. That transfer class immediately reshapes that roster. I think it's akin to, but probably a little bit better than, what Arizona did last offseason in terms of reshaping the roster. I'd take Sanders over Delora at quarterback. Travis Hunter is better than anything that Arizona brought in. So I think, you don't want to saddle them with too many expectations in year one, but I think Deion is going to welcome expectations.
Yes,
and
he will.
My guess is that they're going to do something very similar to what Arizona did this year, which is go from being absolutely moribund to very fun and interesting.
Yeah. No, I think you need to hire someone like that. You talked about maybe bringing in the Veer or something. You wanted some weird offense. Or you get one of the best players in NFL history
to recruit the hell out of the job.
Making a lot of noise at the FCS level. Bring him in. He's on Aflac commercials with Nick Saban. And just absolutely have him crush it out on the recruiting trail. And they're doing that. So props to the Buffs, because we always root for the Buffs, and now they're going to be relevant.
Well, and it's not just transfers, and it's not just like Jackson State guys, too. They've also got 3-4 stars in the high school ranks. Dylan Edwards, an impact running back, and then 2 4-star receivers, Amarion Miller and Adam Hopkins, both out of the South. If Deion is going to be able to recruit the South at Colorado, that's going to be dynamite, because I think Colorado to secure players has had to recruit Texas a lot, and Texas gets pretty picked over with the number of people trying to go into Texas. If he has some sort of ability to pull guys consistently out of Louisiana, out of Georgia, and these are guys who are, not uncoveted, that's going to be huge.
Yeah, I agree. Deion Sanders doing some. I have some pictures there. I should put some B-roll up there, but yeah. Props to Colorado. Props to Deion Sanders.
To me for putting in notes. All right,
you put in a couple of notes, David. Like, you actually did. You did a little bit of work.
I know.
Randomly, how many people we got? Yeah, we got like 47 people watching. 49 people watching. Smash that like button, people.
Smash it.
You got way too many people watching, and
just
not
hit your
likes.
Computer screen.
Eventually, like will come up. Just like start pounding on
just
it.
Just hit it until it breaks, and eventually something good will happen.
Kids were little, they could like just hit the computer randomly, and it would like erase files and stuff. You're like, I couldn't do that if I tried. And my kid comes and just boom, boom, boom. Okay, so we're going to talk about that. We got to talk about these games. And going into this, we had we do our pick contest every year. Congrats. Hold on. Let me David got me this year. It's rare, but he did. So good.
I did.
Good for him. He ends up finishing 56-40-2 against the spread. I was 52-44-2. The final, because I was down 3 games, I just picked opposite day for all 5. Got really close to winning, because there was a game, that flipped at the very end.
There sure was.
but I would have still not won the
You were mathematically eliminated after the first 3 of the weekend. Oh, after the first two.
Yeah. So the first 2 I lost, and then I got 2 of the last 3. But but we had a lot of fun. We both were above 500. We kind of do this for fun. Hopefully, you guys kind of followed along. I don't know why we put so much stock.
Guys, I went 58% against the spread, I believe. I think that's what the grand total was.
Not bad.
Yeah. You make some money. Make some money.
It'll make a little dough.
Make a little cheddar.
You get to do it over there at my bookie. But it was a lot of fun. Hopefully you guys were following along. We will do we did our preseason picks, so we'll do a show coming up where we kind of go through how we did picking each team, where we were right, where we were wrong, things like that. Not just the record of if we thought like a team was 7-5 and they end up 7-5, but we might have got half of the games wrong. They just won ones that we thought they were going to win or lost, whatever. So we'll kind of go over all that stuff in a future episode. We also have to talk about the recruiting classes, which I don't know if we'll maybe wait till after February, after the whole portal stuff is done, because we've seen teams change a lot as the portal stuff happens. So we'll kind of figure that out. But it'd be great to get like Brandon Huffman in, or Greg Biggins, or Blair, or who, you know, any of those guys, to come in and talk about the recruiting classes. I'm going to see Brandon. He's in San Antonio right now.
Are you heading out?
Not yet. I'm not going to San Antonio.
You're going to Hawaii.
I'm going to Hawaii. Chris Trevino is in for my sites over in San Antonio, and you had the Under Armour one too, and then the one in San Antonio, the All American, and then Polynesian Bowl. I like to go to every year. I try to get David to come. You should definitely come. There's probably UCLA guys in it, right?
I'm not coming.
I know, but are there UCLA guys in it?
Yeah, there are.
Okay,
so, but I'm not coming.
Yeah, you should go.
I'm not going.
You get to cover high school football.
No.
In Hawaii.
We're not going.
But Brandon's there. He loves this trip, and he's great to go. He remembers every restaurant we've gone to, and having a beer with Brandon in Hawaii is a special thing. So you should go, because it's a lot of fun.
I'm not going.
Okay.
But I agree with you. Having a beer with Brandon wherever you are is actually tremendous.
Yeah.
You could be on top of a mountain in the middle of the snow.
Yeah.
And it'd be a great experience.
Matthew
He'd
had a
keep
couple
you warm.
Matthew had a couple comments. One, he pointed out, I hit my computer so hard a bell sound. Is that good for the YouTubes?
Absolutely.
Yes, I think that is good.
Please continue.
He also pointed out that all four Power 5 teams that are switching conferences all lost in their bowl games. So Oklahoma, Texas, USC, and UCLA.
Yeah, the natural order did not like what happened.
Is that the college football gods were not super happy. But let's go over these bowl games. We have five games left in the regular season. And first up, we had the number 15.
Oregon Ducks.
Taking on the North Carolina Tar Heels. Oh, I got tar on my heels. I don't know.
It's tough.
This was a come-from-behind win. Oregon pulled it out 28-27. They were favored by 14.5 points in this one. I don't think the odds makers had built in the possibility that Bo Nix would still not be 100% moving, but he was very clearly not 100% moving. It wasn't until very late in the game that he actually had a single productive run, and it was just to keep a drive moving to the go-ahead drive. It was interesting because I think my feeling on it was Mac Brown was not prepared for the realities of Pac-12 football, because you and I knew, everyone knew, kicking a field goal to go up by 6 with a few minutes to go. Why bother? What the hell? What's the point? Oregon's not going to go down and kick a field goal. They're going to go down and score a touchdown right now.
Right. If they do anything, it'll be a touchdown.
Yeah.
They'll either trip over their own feet and you'll give up a safety or something. Well, and they'll score a touchdown.
I thought a mistake was on their 3rd and 13. They dropped back for they were trying to get the full 13 on that one throw. And I think, we've been out here in these streets. We understand Pac-12 football. You get the little bit there because you're going to have to go for it on the fourth down. And they didn't set themselves up with the ability to go for the fourth down. So then they kick the field goal. They go up by 1. But at that point, you're like, oh, of course, Oregon's going to drive down the field and do this. And they did. And they took a good damn long while doing it, too.
Yeah.
It wasn't very quick. They scored with just a little bit to go and pulled ahead by a point. And that's all she wrote. The game itself, I mean, I think a healthy Bo Nix probably, I think Oregon would have scored a lot easier and a lot better. It was just a matter of, they were the odds makers, I think, were anticipating Nix being healthy, and he wasn't quite.
Right.
But, Bucky.
I was anticipating him being healthy, and he was not.
Yeah, yeah. Bucky Irving, though, was incredible
He's
in this
good.
Game. He had some explosive runs. But yeah, I mean, it was a good performance for Oregon. Great to come back and win it. I thought, my man Land Danning managed the clock really well at the end. Mac Brown did not manage that clock very well. Good win. They go into the offseason 10-3. They got to be happy with that given the injury to Nix in the last few games. Good season for Land Danning in his first year at the helm.
Yeah, I would agree. I thought we would see a healthier sort of Bo Nix. And, we know bowl games are fun, but they can be a crapshoot. You take a month off. You have 85, 18 to 22-year-olds with a month off. Who the hell knows what's going to happen? There's a lot. Just think what happened any of our lives over that month. A whole bunch of kids doing the same thing. We get caught up in the spreads and sometimes, but this was a big win. I think for a first year head coach, you get a victory over a Power 5 program. You feel like sometimes you can build off of that. And it's not – the bowl games don't always mean a lot. Like, you're like going to the offseason with a lot of momentum, or you're going to the offseason going to work harder because you lost. You can always kind of spin it however you want. But you feel like there's some disappointments in the season for sure for Oregon, but there was a lot of highlights. And then this is one of them. And I think you couple that with, like, really good recruiting, and you're going to build some momentum for Dan Lanning going forward. And I feel like this is – or Lane Danning. I this was like a feel-good all-around one, you know. And do you care? Like, they cared. Like, you could tell that Oregon cared about
this
game.
They were locked in. Yeah. And it was it was a really good game. It was a lot of fun to watch. But yeah, no, you could tell that this meant something to them, that they were motivated in the proper way. It wasn't one of those lethargic performances that we've grown used to seeing from Pac-12 teams in the lesser bowl games. You know, this was a fitting end to the season for them, and they get Bo Nix back next year.
Yeah, and I thought Oregon's offense did look good early. They weren't really stopped. They missed a field goal.
They just didn't have the consistency. Like, yeah,
then it kind of just fell off.
This was an offense that was top five, they just don't have it when they don't have a dual threat at quarterback. And then there is a factor, too, where Kenny Dillingham, not being part of the staff and that whole thing. I mean, how much of an adjustment's going to be next year with a new play caller and all that kind of stuff?
Yeah. Do you know, so Oregon, last three bowl games for the Ducks, not all Lane Danning, obviously. 1 point wins.
Damn.
Crazy, right? Was it the Red Box Bowl, but then the Rose Bowl I was at, that they won by one, and then winning this one by one. Pretty crazy. But that
better than losing by one.
It's certainly better than losing by one. And we've seen that happen. All right, let's go. Now this one, I don't know how it turned out, because we know the Pac-12 teams don't do well in the Alamo Bowl. We know that, you know, Washington, Texas, this is not going to work out very well, right? It's probably not going to be good, but we had
Washington Huskies
taking on the Texas Longhorns, some sort of fucking deer.
deer.
This final score is a little bit deceptive for me, 27-20.
Wasn't that close?
Yeah, Washington had this one pretty much controlled from the second quarter on. And then Texas just kind of worked its way back in. They got some stops. I'll give them that. But Washington had this one under control. I mostly want to talk about Steve Sarkisian. Ooh. Because pregame, dude. So I watched this clip, I don't know, an easy dozen times. So he's in the tunnel pregame, and one of the bull staff people, or one of the TV people, nobody knows who, puts his hand on his chest and gives him like a little light shove, like, hey, you know, you got to stand back a second, because we got, you know, you got to clear the field or whatever. Doesn't matter. And you can see Sark, he kind of backs up for a second, and then, just knowing the psychology of that guy, he's just like, I can't look like a beta male. I got to scream at this dude now. And it's like so interesting to watch. There's so much psychology at play right there. Like, just this guy who's like kind of just a passive dude, and then he's like, no, I gotta look like a football coach, so I'm gonna scream at this guy right now. And it is such an overreaction to the situation, because it's a way that, like, if you were like a true, like, just kind of a normal dickhead head coach, you would have been like, don't touch me, like, yeah, something like that, right? But because he is so insecure in himself, it's just pure, like, fire at this guy, screaming at him in a way that, like, you wouldn't scream at anybody, not even players on your team when you're mad at them and you're like a knucklehead head coach. It was so interesting. Such insight into his psychology. You knew at that point, no fucking way they're winning this game. None. Zero. Zilch. Way too wound up. It's what we said before the game, remember?
Yeah.
When we were previewing this game, we're like, he's going to want this one so bad. It's his former team. He wants to show them something. He wants to win his ninth game.
It's like Jaden DeLore.
All this stuff.
Right? Like, Jaden DeLore wanted to beat Washington State.
And just way too tightly wound. They lost. Sad. Washington, though, 11-2 in Kalen DeBoer's first year. They are a loss to ASU from being a friggin' playoff team. in his first year. Sky's the limit for them. Michael Penix, he's going to be great next year. Ton of fun. Good for them. And beating Texas in the Alamo Bowl, that's a road game. Good job.
Yeah. Props to the Huskies and Kalen DeBoer. Like, turns out when you hire like a coach that's like good at stuff, like, I don't know, offensing, you score points and like do well. And you don't have to be amazing. Like, you don't have to have the best defense in the world. Like, yeah, score more points than the other team. You're going to win some games. That ASU one is still very, very questionable. They started with a flea flicker in this game. So tried to get a little razzle-dazzle. Penix gets picked. And then Washington blocks the punt for right away for Texas. And that kind of felt like a big play for me, that there was like, all right, this is, you know, things are, you know, even if Washington makes a mistake, they're going to be able to bounce back and recover. And, you know, it looked like they were in control and, you know, Texas scored a little bit at the end. Okay, that's fine. But this was, watching the game, you feel like, okay, Washington is going to win this game. And they were getting 4 points in there. Quinn Ewers was like, I don't know, he didn't look like the number one player in the country or anything. I mean, Penix probably not the best game, right, either. But, like, he's now the – he set the leading passer in the country, I believe.
Yep.
So congrats for him. He'll be – you know, he puts up numbers like that again next year. He'll probably be in New York. So he was a top 10 vote getter this year. And you mentioned Sark and his former team. He's now 0-2 against the Huskies. So he lost at USC where he got fired.
Yep.
And he lost this one. So, yeah. But I don't know. It's for Washington to have the kind of season they did, 4-8 to 11 wins. I mean, kudos. It's a lot. And I, you know, for Jen Cohen to like figure out, hey, my Jimmy Lake thing, that was wrong.
Yeah.
Get off of that fast. Get someone in here that's good and win right away. Like, I don't know if you could turn things around as fast as she did.
Well, and I don't remember the coaching search that long, that well, because I don't think it lasted very long. And I think they knew their guy. And I think a part of, you know, getting rid of Lake is there's a hot coach on the market who's, you know, West region already. He's at Fresno State. Let's get going. Let's get this done. And they did.
And you got those two right. I took Texas. Well, I took the opposite of you. This one, though, I definitely wanted Pitt from the very, very beginning. This was not just going opposite you. This was, I felt super strongly about. If you watch the game, you know why, because there was no question who was going to win. We have number 18.
UCLA Bruins.
The Pittsburgh Panthers won.
I mean, I'm getting points with Pitt. Come on. That's all day, every day.
137-35. this was one of the most absurd football games I think I've ever seen. So UCLA. So, all right. Pittsburgh got their hands on 5 balls that were thrown, right? Pass defended, whatever. They intercepted 4 of those. So the rate at which you're supposed to do that, I think it's something like 1 in 3. So they should have had 1 interception. Instead, they had 4. So of the 5 times they touched the ball in the air, they got picks on 4 of them. There were 2 balls that bounced off of UCLA receivers' hands into the waiting arms of a Pitt defender. There was another interception that was a legitimate one, and then there was the Ethan Garber's one late. On top of that, there were 3 fumbles in this football game. 2 by Pitt, 1 by UCLA. All 3 recovered by Pitt.
Mm.
The turnovers luck was such that UCLA... So the win expectancy, which I cited earlier, was 97.7%. 97.7% of the time, the game with an underlying stats of that game, UCLA wins.
Gotcha.
What the margin of victory should have been, according to that formula, should have been close to 16 points. So UCLA should have won. They should have covered by about 12 points in this game.
Yeah.
Instead, they lost in hilarious fashion, frankly. the Pitt field goal kicker pulled a Cardi. He was 5 for 5 and kicked the game winner. on the game-winning drive. UCLA drove the field with the backup quarterback, Ethan Garbers, to go ahead. They were up 35-34 with 34 seconds to go.
Oh,
now again, we've
over, right?
We've run a lot of Pac-12 reps here on this show. We knew it wasn't over. And of course, Pitt drives down the field in three plays. At one point, one of the Murphy twins sort of launched himself like a torpedo at the quarterback, but didn't use any of, you know, these appendages, the ones that are on your shoulders. What are they called again?
The arms.
Your arms. Right, right, right. He didn't want to use those. He just wanted to see how hard he could hit him while he maintained, vertical integrity. And so the quarterback, the backup quarterback, Nick Patty, ran enough to get them into field goal range. If they just brought him down prior to the first down marker, more than likely UCLA wins the game. So if he used his arm appendages, if he used those things attached to the sides of his body, likely UCLA wins the game. But it shouldn't have been that close. Dorian Thompson-Robinson finished with three picks. Two of them were off the hands of his receivers into the waiting arms of Pitt defenders who were doing nothing on the play. They just happened to be right there waiting for an interception. I thought going into the game, Pitt was very bad and depleted. There was nothing about this game that changed my mind, but it was pure gong show from UCLA.
Just knowing that Keaton Slovis wasn't there, you figure they're going to be good.
And on top of the fumbled kickoff, and I should note this, so there were high winds in this game. So that helped lead to the fumbled kickoff. But then on the next kickoff for Pittsburgh, they kick it. And UCLA is clearly like, oh, this one's sailing into the end zone. We're just going to let it go. But it dies. Like, it just dies in the air at the five, and nobody picks it up. Nobody grabs it. And so they have to, like, really quickly get over there. Nobody caught it. But then Ethan Garbers, when he came in for an injured Dorian Thompson-Robinson, he had to start his first drive from inside his own five. Hmm. Again, not ideal. Very stupid game. Extremely, extremely unfun for UCLA fans. I think for anyone watching who had no vested interest in it, it was extremely enjoyable because it was very stupid.
Yeah. El Paso, like, there's some weird weather. It's like, you've been there? Have you been to El Paso?
Yeah.
Yeah. You fly in and it's like, I remember flying in and it's like, there's tumbleweeds and you look like, it feels like you're crash landing because there's nothing. It's like desert or whatever and it's scrub. Brush and then you land and there's like, oh, there's airport, there's a city and all that kind of stuff. The LA schools aren't very good at the kickoff return kind of stuff. Both had some issues there. This is this common theme, David. If UCLA has to pass the ball more, they're not as good. They're 0-4. When they do run the ball more, they're 9-0 on season. DTR finishes 22 yards short of Cade McNown's career passing record, 10,708 passing yards. He could have got that. He did come out late in the game.
Mm-hmm.
Was he hurt? Was it like they just put Garbers in? Like, what was going on? Because he had thrown all the picks, but, you know, like you said, none of them aren't all his fault. But what was going on there late in the game?
He was hurt. I don't know what was the injury. It looked like his lower back, but he was hurt. So it wasn't performance related. Again, two of those interceptions were just pure fluke stuff. I mean, one of them was a very similar throw to the USC one, where it was a dropping defensive end. He just didn't see him underneath the coverage.
Yeah.
But the other two were just, I mean, the receivers should make the catch, and even if they don't, it should just be something that falls to the ground, not a pick. So it wasn't performance related. He wasn't like his best, but he wasn't that bad. And then Ethan Garbers came in and was really shaky on his first two drives, but then led the potential go-ahead drive. Zach Charbonnet was not available.
I was going to say.
He was a late scratch. We had heard the day before that he was more than likely going to play, but then I think the day of decided against it.
Interesting. Okay.
But Pitt, like, whatever. Who gives a shit? Pitt was down everybody. They were down a defensive tackle. They were down a starting defensive end. They were down their starting quarterback. They were down the starting running back. They were down two starting offensive tackles. They were down everybody. They were down a starting safety. And they won.
Yeah. Crazy. Bowl games are nuts. All right. Let's go to the two New Year's Six bowls. I just got back from Dallas on this one. Number 10,
USC Trojans.
And they were taking on the Tulane Green Wave?
Green Wave.
I don't think we're green. Did you like that?
Yeah, that was good.
So this was, I mean, obviously USC had a blowout going. Nothing too interesting there at the, oh shit. I just caught up. Sorry, I had a really delayed feed. So USC had a lead, 45-30.
With 4:30 left.
With 4 minutes to go, right?
A little over, like 4:30, I think.
Yeah. So you would think they got this one. Even if they allow Tulane to score right there, they're going to be able to go ahead and drive down the field again. So, all right, so Tulane scores. Okay, whatever. No big deal, right? But here's,
it was a long, methodical 17-second drive.
Yeah. No, here's where things get stupid, because Willie Fritz, he understood the only way to beat USC is to be a blessed idiot. So what does he not do on that drive? He doesn't go for two. And what does he not do on the kickoff? He does an onside kick. No, he kicks deep, down 45-37 with just under 4 minutes to go at that point. He kicks deep.
Yeah.
And is it Mario Williams?
It was Mario Williams.
Mario Williams, chilling back there. He's like, you know what?
Wasn't the normal kickoff returner.
I'm going to fair catch this one. We're not going to get stupid. We're not going to get silly. And instead of catching it, he stands at the 1 yard line and proceeds to rugby pitch it out of bounds. I'm assuming he was just like a flashback memory to playing rugby or something at some point in his past.
I don't know.
But that's exactly what it is.
I've been calling for them to fair catch the whole time. At least he tried to fair catch.
He tried to.
But you're standing next to the sideline, just let it bounce and go.
And he rugby pitches it out of bounds.
Yeah.
So it's at the one. And so you're thinking, oh, okay, well, they maybe won't score here, but at least Tulane still has to go for two. You know, USC's run game has been pretty good just kind of consistently throughout the year. They haven't actually utilized it enough. So they should be able to, you know, get 5-10 yards and then punt it away, right?
Yeah.
So they go on first down and they get no gain, right? Tulane stuffs it. But certainly a defense, what is this? Is it MAC? What the fuck are they? Sun Belt?
American Athletic Conference.
American. Certainly an American defensive line isn't going to be able to do that twice in a row. And they weren't. They weren't able to just purely stuff them twice in a row. No, on the second one, they knife into the backfield and get a safety.
Yeah.
And at that point, you knew the game was over.
100%.
It's just a question of how this is going to break down.
Yes.
But it was 45-39, and USC has to kick it away. So the only question is Tulane going to be stupid enough to score quickly here?
Right.
Because one way or another, they're scoring.
I tweeted, like, will Caleb Williams have something like, will he have enough time for the game-winning field goal drive after Tulane scores? Like, I just tweeted, assuming
correct,
Tulane's going to score. But they used up all the clock.
And then Willie Fritz calls the most bizarre, like, most bizarre drive ever. Again, it's the Kyle Whittingham blessed idiot. Because not calling timeouts at the right time, screwing up when they're going to call them, the whole thing. They have to convert a couple of fourth downs on the way, a fourth and ten at one point. And then they drive it down. First, there's so they get it down to like the three or something. And then there's the most obvious targeting I've ever seen in a football game that is not called targeting. I don't give a shit what the technicalities of the rule are. If both players walk away from the hit that is helmet on helmet,
yeah,
concussed, there should be a targeting call or do away with the rule.
Yeah.
Like one or the other. But if both guys walk away where they can't actually walk away and they need to be helped off the field because you hit each other so hard in the head, that should be targeting. That's it.
Fair.
And so instead it's not, but it's still at the three. And then Tulane punches it in with mere seconds left on the clock. USC then has a couple of very horrible plays from the 10-yard line.
Because they, again, didn't field the kickoff correctly and had to start at their 11. Like after,
absolutely insane. Yeah, yeah. No, and they – just craziness. And Caleb Williams was really off on the first throw. The funny thing about that first throw is if he hadn't been really off on it, they would have been – midfield-ish, 45-yard line or so, with you know, a decent enough chance at the Hail Mary.
Yeah,
crazy.
The did you like?
And I liked everything about this game, but ask me exactly what I liked.
And 5-something minutes left, mm-hmm, and I think USC got maybe tackle for a loss. They had the ball like near midfield. It's second, maybe 11 or 12 second, and Willie Fritz calls his first timeout with over 5 minutes left in the game, realizing that this is our best chance to get a stop.
Yeah.
And then they're using their timeouts and and USC ended up kicking a field goal on that drive. They kind of got a little conservative or whatever, but did you like them using a timeouts that early?
I think they had to. I think they had to. I think at that point, because they're thinking.
Because that was advanced. That's like, to use timeouts that early is more of a new thing. Not, you know, you were talking about you should have went for two early. You should have onside kick. But to so call a timeout that early in the game,
even
you
the
don't see that
not very going often. For two, it's not that stupid, because at that point in the game, you also need to be cognizant of morale. Yeah. And if you don't get the two, you're at minus nine. And everyone who can do math is like, no, we lost the game.
Yeah.
And so you might lose the team. So you keep it alive. It's a little bit earlier in the game where I would automatically go for two. Like if there are 6 minutes to go and you're down by potentially seven or eight, I go for the two then. But if it's only whatever it was, four, three and a half minutes to go, I think you've got to maintain the morale of the team a little bit.
Yeah.
I actually don't think he managed it that poorly. I thought his clock management on the final drive was a little bit questionable, but some of that was his quarterback being extremely shaky.
Yeah.
That was the thing, is USC actually had, like, I won't say a great game plan, but they managed that quarterback pretty well. He did, every time he completed it, he threw like a it was like the ball went for like 50 yards.
He was 8 of 18. For 234, this is Michael Pratt.
Yeah.
8 of 18, 234 yards. So this is like 29 point something yards per completion, like almost 30 yards every time he completes the ball.
But the thing is, the pass rush was disrupting him at different points. It's just everything else is bad about USC's defense. The only good thing is Tuli Polotu. That's it.
And he didn't do much until the very end of the game. In this one, Mekhi Blackman's been good. You talk about, like, I remember when you said, like, Colorado doesn't have playmakers. Like, Gonzalez goes to Oregon. He has a great season. Mekhi Blackman has a great season. Brendan Rice goes off on this game, 6 catches for 174 yards, 2 touchdowns, some highlight plays. He mossed a couple guys. So those former Buffs did pretty well.
Yeah, they sure did.
For the better teams. Caleb Williams had a bunch of guys drop balls. He threw for 462 yards.
He was great. He was great in this game.
He could have been 500 easy. 5 touchdowns. He had the one pick.
Brendan Rice had a really nice game.
Rice was great. Taj Washington had a good game. Austin Jones really couldn't get much going. They were out 2 of their best offensive linemen, but I thought the offensive line was okay.
Relique Brown played one of the weirdest games I've ever seen.
He runs sideways.
Yeah, and I don't know at what point he was going to realize, if ever, that Tulane's got some fast players, and they're going to run right with you right to the sideline every single time. But it happened over and over and over again.
And I thought, like, Tulane, I did a lot of advanced stats, like, Tulane had a really good offense, defense. Like, they were just a good, well-coached team. They did well. The best group of 5 team. They tackled USC really well. USC just was like, but, they, you know, USC held the ball for 40 minutes versus 20 in this game. Tulane averaged over 10 yards a play. I mean, insane kind of numbers.
No, it was interesting because I thought it was
way more plays. Like,
USC, the way they played in this had the profile of the team that was trying to steal one, you know, dominate. Like,
yeah, their opening drive was 9 minutes long, 17 play, 9 minute drive.
Well, and I walked away from that being like, that was not a good drive for USC. That's not the way they want to be.
They had to convert like a bunch of third downs and a fourth down.
That's not, and I walked away like, that's harder than it should have been. And from then on, it wasn't that hard, but that first drive was really hard for USC. Like, they had to really work for it.
USC scored a lot of points, but Tulane made them work for it. USC didn't make Tulane work for anything. I mean, this defense started off pretty good, and they were statistically, and like towards the end of the season, beating UCLA, but giving up in the 40s. You get 92 points, I think, over the last 2 games. Pretty crazy, but there was no resistance whatsoever. To have Tajay Spears, we knew he was going to be, I tweeted before, he's going to have a big game, 17 rushes for 205 yards, 4 touchdowns. I mean, that kind of stuff is just like, they were so good on offense and so bad on special teams and defense. I just don't know what you say. You're just like, yep, you're really good on offense and you really sucked in the other 2 aspects of the game. But yeah, one of those weird ones. But yeah, that was a, that was a crazy one. And then to cap it off, it was a weird day of football. We really thought, I picked against you thought this one was going to be wrong for sure, but I ended up getting it right. We had the number 8.
Utah Utes.
Taking on the Penn State Nittany Lions. This one was just disappointing. Because it had the feel of a game that was going to be close, it was going to be good, and then Cam Rising goes down with an injury, potentially a serious one to his leg. And from then on, it was just all Penn State. You know, Utah was, I think, at that point down 21-14, with Utah driving a little bit, and then Cam Rising goes down, Bryson Barnes comes in, and I think two plays later, he throws a pick. You know, and that's unfortunate, because I think, you know, it was certainly more of a game early than you thought. And Cam Rising wasn't playing well. He threw a pick early. He finished 8 of 21. But they had it at 14-14 at halftime. And there was certainly potential for this one to get fun and good in the second half, and then it just didn't. I was impressed by Penn State. I was impressed by their athleticism. I thought they had a lot of speed on the field on both sides of the ball. And they, you know, outclassed Utah once Rising went out, but it was just kind of unfortunate. You know, you want to see starting quarterbacks play in these games and play well, and Rising just wasn't able to after the third quarter.
It's weird because, like, towards the end of the season, like, sometimes you're like, oh, Bo Nix looks pretty good, and then he's like, oh, he doesn't look the same. And, like, Cam Rising, we saw him in the Pac-12 championship game, he looked fine, you know, and I don't know, it just wasn't as good in this one early on. And I think it hurts morale when he's out, but it definitely hurt not to have, like, guys like Dalton Kincaid out there too. But, once he went down, it just seemed to be a lost cause. And they didn't play – they played Bryson Barnes, right? They didn't play the
– Yeah, it was just Bryson Barnes.
The freshman at all, which you thought maybe you would do that. And you
talk about – Jaquindon Jackson was out there just playing running back.
Okay. But – Utah got a garbage touchdown. This was 35-14. It just was a little sort of disappointing.
Yeah, it was anticlimactic because it was a good game and then it wasn't.
Right. And, I mean, it matters, you know. And I know there was USC fans, like, tweeting at me, like, you know, Utah was bitching about, you know, USC's quarterback got hurt in the championship game and they were all upset. Like, that doesn't matter. Well, it matters. You saw it. I mean, you know, Cam Rising going down, it was a different team, even though he wasn't playing that well. He's going to come back, right? Is that the...
Yeah, I think so.
So, yeah. You know what's weird?
What?
So Kyle Whittingham is 11-5 in bowl games, but he's lost 4 in a row. So remember, was it like, was he, I think it was like 10-0 at one point or something. Yeah. And it was like 11-1, and now it's...
Well, the competition has certainly risen. Because they're getting into better bowl games.
They're getting better, yeah, better bowl games and stuff. And this was the first time all year they haven't scored in the third quarter, but that's when Rising.
Yeah. It's hard to take too much from it when, you know, you lose a guy that early. It's one thing to have a backup come in and play like two drives at the end, but it's another thing to have him try to do.
Right. That was the last thing.
Full quarter and a half against a top tier opponent.
Yeah. This was one of those where Utah had just made progress, right? Like, it was like, win the division, win the conference, like, break through and go to the Rose Bowl and be this close to beating, you know, Ohio State. I really did feel, even though I picked Penn State, I really did feel that this was going to be, Utah was going to, like,
yeah.
I thought they would roll in this game, to be honest. Like, I just really felt like they're going to play well. And no Clark Phillips.
Yeah,
I think that was a big deal, but we'll see. I mean, so what do you like? Look at Utah's season. Like, they wouldn't have made the Pac-12 championship game except for the change rules.
Mm-hmm.
But you won the Pac-12, so that's got to be a success, right? But is it, like, we had really high expectations for this Utah team?
Yeah, of course it's a success.
Okay.
Yeah. No. Absolutely. They have 3 losses in the regular season. I think the Florida loss was a slight disappointment.
Yep.
I think for Utah fans, I mean, sure, you're hoping to make it to a playoff, but I think winning the conference and making the Rose Bowl is something that, like, Utah fans, that was a pipe dream 6 years ago, 7 years ago.
True.
And now it's something they've done in back-to-back years. No, I don't think they've reached the point where that's a disappointment. I don't know that any program in the league is saddled with those expectations except for USC. I mean, I think Oregon maybe to a slight extent, but I think everyone else, year in, year out, do what Utah does. I think the fan base would be stoked.
Yeah.
And I think Utah should be. They've got, we've been saying it for years, but it holds even more true. They're not just the most consistent program in the league, but they're the best. And until somebody unseats them, they will be the best. To do what they do with the talent level they have is extraordinary. And yes, he's a blessed idiot, but he's also a fucking great coach, Kyle Whittingham. So, disappointing. But again, this was a one score game with Utah driving when Cam Rising hurt his leg. Who knows what would have happened? And if his leg stays healthy, do they win that game? And if they win that game, how does the narrative change? So I don't think you can pin too much on it. They had a very successful year.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's our that was our
Pac-12 roundup.
So I didn't play that one earlier. Let's take a quick break. We don't have that many questions. We'll come back. If you have any questions in the chat, if you're watching live, put them in there. We'll try to answer them. But back in a minute. All right, we're back here on the podcast of champions.
Here we are.
We had three bowl champions in the Pac-12. That's not bad.
Is that what we call them?
They're bowl champions.
Mm.
Some kind of bowl.
Yep.
Okay. I want a bowl.
Okay.
Championing it up. What do we got for questions here? I think we're starting with Mike. Question for Dave.
Okay.
Is that right? UCLA questions for Dave. I don't remember when we recorded last, but I think this is the latest or the...
Sure.
Last year after the LSU game, you were fully on board the Chip train, only to jump off by the end of the year. Same thing this year. We beat Utah. And then after Arizona, you were done with them. With Dante Moore on board, are you rolling with the bamboo for good? Or is he an ASU a loss away from going back to the dumpster?
Clearly written before the Pitt game.
Hmm.
Look, I think there's some other things going on with UCLA right now that have allowed the Dante Moore recruitment, have allowed some changes in the recruiting structure.
Okay.
I think those are independent of who the head coach is.
Okay.
To an extent. So I don't know. I mean, I think. So here's the thing. I don't think realistically USC is going to get rid of him. So it's a matter of determining, can he get it done with what he has? And right now he needs to make a change at defensive coordinator. He needs to make big changes on his defensive staff. And he needs to go out and get, I won't say an entirely new defense in the transfer portal, but at least probably four or five starters. That's a tall order. He's got a lot to do. And I think if you're going to go into the Big Ten with him, you have to feel comfortable in his ability to do that year in and year out.
Okay.
So I think it's undecided. If I was the one wielding the magic wand that is firing and hiring coaches, he would have already been gone a long time ago. Because I don't think you give I don't think in modern college football you can give as many years as he's gotten to get this right. But it is trending in a slightly more positive direction, right? They went 8-4, they went 9-3. Okay. Two easy schedules, sure, but okay. And now if he can get some defense, you'll have a new quarterback next year, but if he can get some defense, potential to do a pretty good, have a pretty good record again next year because the schedule is not very hard. So
are they going to elevate Clancy Pendergast? Is he going to take over the defense? Or?
But that's what I'm saying, is if it's another like just kind of a retread as your defensive coordinator, then what are you doing here?
Yeah.
So they need to go out and hire a big-time defensive coordinator, and they need to replace half the defense. And not – those guys didn't graduate. They just need to upgrade.
Yeah.
They've got a lot of Mountain West-level talent in the defense, and that just needs to change. And I'm sure the same is similar for USC. Slightly different set of expectations, but that defense and that defensive coordinator, I'm sure, is very embattled right now.
So. Very. Yes, there's a lot of talk about that. By the way, did you you're a Reese's Peanut Butter Cup guy?
Yeah, from time to time.
Okay. I brought you back some.
Oh, thank you.
There's a little cup over there. Did you see those?
Thank you. Yeah, I see them.
But so you haven't covered a bowl game in a long time.
No, I haven't covered a bowl game since the 2015 San Francisco, whatever it was called then, bowl.
All right. Well, if UCLA goes to the Cotton Bowl, I'm going to highly recommend you going to cover it. They treat the media very, very well.
Oh, they only made you wait 50 minutes for the press conference that one day?
That was the one day, but that was USC. That wasn't the Cotton Bowl people. There's the hospitality suite in there. I'm playing like video games, playing pool.
Oh, didn't Lincoln Riley go yellow bellied coward at the end of the game and not take any more than like three questions?
Well, I don't know who was controlling that, but there was a pool. We weren't allowed to shoot video of the press conference, and it was, and there was only like three questions at the end for Lincoln Riley, so that was a little discouraging. I'm just talking about the free beer, the free gourmet food. We had brisket, all kinds of stuff. It was great,
Dave. Have you covered the Sun Bowl?
No.
The Sun Bowl hospitality is out of control.
Nice.
There's free beer. There's free liquor. It's free wine. There's all kinds of stuff. It's just in El Paso, so people give it a bad name.
Oh, yeah. I would love to do that. But when they covering the Pac-12 championship game, and we had, we're in Allegiant Stadium. We have like these terrible burgers, like that's what you get, and it was the same thing last year.
There isn't a single California footprint bowl game worth its salt. All of them, they're horrible to the media.
Yeah, but
and Vegas sucks too. No, Texas, they do it right.
It was amazing, and so they were doing contests. I like they had a media Olympics. I got was doing the cornhole, and I won a big cooler, and then I guessed the number of Reese's peanut butter cups in a jar, and I won like a tumbler, and I like literally 300 of those little Reese's peanut butter cups. They're like, I win the thing. I'm like, oh, that's cool. And then they bring the jar over that you had to guess. It was just 285 of them, and they're like, oh, by the way, you get all these too. I'm like, what am I going to do with all this stuff? Like, I had to like
you had to fly it back.
Yeah, and then talking to like, they take care of the players. Like the players get a duffel bag at the end because they get stuff in their room like every day. The Cotton Bowl, it's like, they treat it like it's the national championship, and they had this huge media room, and there was like no national media there. It was like just all like kind of local people. But I loved it. It was great.
I'm very happy for you.
Yeah.
All right. Next up, we've got Meat from Ryan.
Meat. Okay.
Dear Dave and Ryan, I love you guys. Oh. Congrats to Oregon on another great class. Please help me understand Coach Meat. He has had a decade plus of being a pretty awful coach, but even with all of those data points, he manages to be a fantastic recruiter. Maybe I'm wrong, but this perspective seems to be fairly widely shared. I can accept that these kids are young and dumb, but are their parents and coaches that dumb too? How does he and other coaches with similar reputations and track record do it? God bless you both. Ryan. First, I think it's very, very difficult to assess quality of assistant coaches based on individual anecdotes, because for every whatever guy you didn't think improved under Meat, there's also Fabian Moreau, who went from a guy who had never played cornerback before in his life, I think, heading into college, to an NFL player. Now, do you attribute that to Meat? If you don't, then are you operating
Demetrius Martin, if you don't know who Coach Meat is.
Right. It depends on what level of bias you're operating with, is my point there. Because I think he's a decent enough defensive backs coach. I think a lot of UCLA fans have a negative impression of him because of the overall defensive strategy, which had them not looking back for the ball, playing the receiver. But some of that is like a well-learned strategy. You don't always look back for the ball because that's how you get beat. But anyway, that being said, recruiting is not much about, oh, I'm going to coach you up. No. Me, I'm the guy. It's relationships.
The whole relationship.
Yeah, Demetrius Martin has great relationships with a ton of SoCal. I mean, that's where his bread and butter is, in SoCal, with basically every high school coach in the area. He grew up with some of them. He went to Muir, I think, in Pasadena.
Yeah.
He's got a ton of connections in the area. He's a real relationship builder. He doesn't just recruit his position. He recruits a lot of other positions as well. He's the guy who brought 5-star L.S. McCarthy, who didn't turn out to be very good, but brought him to UCLA.
Yep.
Really dynamic recruiter. Can't say enough about him. And I think he's a fine enough coach. I always thought that was a little bit wrong, the way he got kind of thrown under the bus because Jim Mora was a defensive backs guy, and he was also had a hand in what kind of defensive strategy they had.
Yeah, it's like you got a great politician that's good at getting elected. Doesn't mean he's a great leader, you know, a great maker of policy or anything. It's more about those relationships. And, you know, that recruiting is a big part of that. You just see it all the time. All right. Let me put up a couple of these comments, questions. David on YouTube says, who's your pick for conference champions in 2023? Well, the problem is we don't know what. There's no divisions.
We have to do the schedule stuff. We have to, like, before we get into that, we have to, like, lock into the schedule. I think there's, like, a few teams who are going to be in the conversation, obviously. USC, Washington, Oregon.
Utah.
I mean,
can't leave out Utah.
Same basic teams that are always in it. And, you know.
UCLA.
Well, they're going to be rebuilding a little bit because they're going to have a new quarterback. But
Oregon State?
The four teams we just mentioned, they're probably all going to have the same quarterbacks. And Oregon State is, they should be in that conversation now, and they've got a real talent at quarterback that they could turn into a real good player.
Brian wants to know, when does Grinch go to LAX? So he's talking about Alex Grinch, USC's defensive coordinator. They flew in afterwards, so he was already there. Lincoln Riley was asked about his future, and it was just he's, you know, 15 minutes after the game, they're gonna deep dive in the coming week, so I don't know if they're gonna make a move. And then I'll do one last one and we'll go back to the emails. West Texas Mike, when USC kicked a field goal on 4th and 4 to go up just 15 with 4:30 to go in the fourth quarter, I would have went for it. What says you, David Woods? I think you'd say, of course.
Yeah, I was expecting them to do it. I was expecting them to go for it. It was 4th and 4 at the Tulane 26 with 4:30 to go. You have an opportunity to finish the game right there with your offense on the field. Instead, they left the door open. 15 points isn't, for the purposes of end game, it's not.
It's significant more than 12. I mean, that's a big change. 12 to 15 is a big change.
It's a big change, but it's not. It doesn't change the overall math. They still have to score twice to get it into tie or win.
Two touchdowns. Right. Yeah.
And they had to score twice to do it at 12 points too, and they had to be both touchdowns at 12 points. If you get those 5 yards right there, if you convert the 4th and 4, you're ending the game, because you're going to force them to use all of the remaining timeouts, and you preserve your touchdown options. And if you score a touchdown there, the game is absolutely 100% over.
Right.
So I thought it was a mistake, and with the way their offense was rolling, absolutely a mistake.
Okay. Do you want to grab a next?
Yeah, I'll do. This is John and Brea.
Okay.
Dear Zodiac Killer, hi Ryan and Dave. Happy holidays to you both. Could you do me a favor and please pass along the following message to the Zodiac Killer? Dear Zodiac Killer, as you take down the black and white photos of David Shaw and the Stanford tree you developed in your bathroom darkroom and taped all over your apartment walls, and as you consider what Pac-12 team deserves your unparalleled passion and intense focus, I encourage you to jump on the University of Arizona freight train as it's about to pull out of the station. Here are 3 points for you to consider. 1. We just signed the number 43 recruiting class in the country. Half of the class is from California, which means the Golden State recruiting pipeline is open and flowing directly to the old Pueblo.
Nice.
2. We have an inspiring slogan. Bear down, the phrase delivered by Bird Button Salmon on his deathbed in 1926, has become one of the greatest two-word verb preposition slogans in all of college athletics. Yes, we are the Wildcats, but everyone knows that what Button meant. He was the Tim Tebow of the 20s, and now there is a bronze bust of Button outside the football facilities pretty close to the stadium. 3. Jed Fish wears a visor, which is generally not recommended for sun protection in the Sonoran Desert. But our leader is fearless, and his toughness and the example he sets is what is transforming the culture on the field, in the locker room, and throughout the entire U of A community. Coach Fish is relentlessly positive and suggested that a jump from 5 wins this season to 9 wins next season is a possibility. And as Coach Fish vowed at his signing day press conference, the build will never stop. Join us, Zodiac Killer. Come to the desert. It's no longer just a place for people to move if they have asthma. The Painted Desert is a place to find redemption and start fresh. Bear down, John and Brea. He should be doing marketing materials for Arizona.
I think so. He went to Arizona State too, so
that's really funny.
Yeah, John's great. Thanks, John. And so you like the the message to the Zodiac Killer. We'll see if we hear from him.
Yeah, hopefully we will.
Haven't heard from him in a while.
Hopefully we'll get something with like magazine cutout letters on a white piece of paper.
Oh, that'd be great.
Yes.
We'll give him your mailing address.
Yes, that'd be great.
How loud will it get? This is Frank in Sacramento. Will a chance to fire Alex Gritz be as loud as the chance were to fire Clay Helton? In other words, will Kara Fult, that's the USC president, be slammed every time she says the slightest thing on Instagram? They did. USC did have to kind of shut off a lot of their social media comments because of the, like, basically, yeah, like the president would tweet like, "Hey, we won this grant for $1 million to like fight cancer or something," and everyone would be like, "Fire Clay Helton." And so they had to like stop commenting on their things. I don't think it will get to that. The defensive coordinator will not be. The president of the university probably won't be inundated with requests to fire the defensive coordinator. But who am I? I don't know.
This has got to be one of the worst USC defenses ever.
So last year, statistically, it might have been in history. It was really, really bad. And then USC, it didn't start off as bad this year. But by the end of the year, it's just absolutely horrible. Like, just I'm going to go through some of the stuff, but like the explosive play rate. I mean, the fact that you completed 8 passes and average was 30 yards.
They were 111th in points per drive allowed.
Bad.
That's really bad. They were, let's see, yards per play. They were 122nd in yards per play allowed.
Yeah.
That's
not good, right?
I got to imagine that's among the worst ever for USC.
It would have to be. Last year, they were bad.
Last year, they were better in yards per play allowed.
Oh,
now,
okay.
These are not opponent adjusted, but they were better in yards per play.
Okay.
Yeah. Boy, howdy.
Nice.
Okay. All right. You want to do the next one?
Oh, is this me? I think I just did that one. That's okay.
Oh, wait. Yeah, you did.
Oh, I can.
No,
I can
no, you're fine. You're fine. You're fine. You're fine. You're beautiful. You're great.
Someone was spamming the comments, so I was trying to like clean that up.
All right. This is from Brian. Finishing games. Ryan and Dave, I had a thought watching USC meltdown against Tulane. In the second half, USC was extremely efficient on offense, just like Tulane. They scored 2 touchdowns on drives of 5 plays, 98 yards in 2 minutes and 38 seconds, and 7 plays, 47 yards in 3 minutes and 31 seconds. It was clear Tulane's secondary was gassed and couldn't cover the wideouts, so SC then decided to kill some clock on their last scoring drive, 11 plays, 46 yards, but taking almost 6.5 minutes. My question is, why would you ever slow down when dominating a defense? Why don't more coaches take a page out of Oregon Chip Kelly's book and just say they can't stop us, we aren't slowing down, and we will try and score 70? If USC doesn't slow down and keeps playing aggressive, I don't see the way of stopping them. And even with their ferocious defense, they probably win going away. Curious what you guys think on this topic, as I know it happens multiple times a year where teams get conservative, try to kill off clock, and inevitably end up killing their own rhythm. Go Beavs, love the pod, and thanks Ryan for all your prep work and Dave for showing up to tape.
They were ferocious.
That opening drive, it was a 17-play, 9-minute and 2-second drive. Like, they weren't slowing down. They just weren't – like, Tulane was playing tough, and they had to work for their touchdown drives. It wasn't like they were – they had some fast ones, but they had some – the first drive of the game was very slow. So I wouldn't say that they slowed it down.
I don't think they super slowed it down, but they were eating up a ton of the play clock on the final drive. The thing I would say is, to Brian's point – it's sort of like a really good offensive team in basketball. You want to increase the number of possessions. You want to have as many as you can, especially when your defense is shitty, because your defense is only going to work by luck. Like, it's only going to be a random turnover or big sack on a, you know, on a second down or something that just puts them so far behind that they can't, you know, take advantage of your horrible secondary.
Yeah.
But you've got to take advantage of luck on defense. Put your offense on the field as much as you want, because a big problem at the end of that game is that they didn't have enough time at the end of the game to go down and score.
That happened to them twice.
They score a little bit quicker on the field goal than all those end game things. They might have a minute to go at the end and a minute to go with Caleb Williams. You feel pretty good about your chances of at least getting a field goal.
Yeah.
So I would say strategically, and this is where I think they could take a note from Lan Danning. He understood that his defense wasn't good, and so he, you know, did his very, very, very best at all times to maximize offensive possessions.
Which got to be hard for him being a defensive guy.
Yeah, but
he did it.
But like, this is the thing where Lincoln Riley, Lincoln Riley strikes me as he's got a great offensive scheme. He's a great play caller, the whole thing. But he's got a little bit of dumb football guy thing going on where he's like, well, we'll put it on our defense and our defense will figure it out or whatever. And it's just like, no, it fucking won't because it's bad. Wow, this USC's defense is making me curse like Stanford.
You're really.
It's
like if we're playing like, we're playing 2-on-2 basketball and you're like way better than me. And you're like, no, let's get Ryan some shots. You're like, no, Dave, you take the ball.
Yeah, no.
Like, yeah. It's like, oh, no, hey, no, hey, shoot that three, Ryan. I'm just clanking stuff up. You're like no, like,
what are you doing
like,
trying to
win?
Why are you trying to rest your defense? No.
Yeah.
No, it doesn't matter if they're well rested. It doesn't matter if they have a year off. They're still going to suck. You've got Alex Grinch as your defensive coordinator. Just continue doing your thing offensively.
Yeah. We got one more comment, I think, and then we'll. Trunks, does USC become the automatic favorite if they hire Jim Leonard? So that's the former Wisconsin defensive coordinator who was up for the Wisconsin job, and they end up hiring Luke Fickle. So I don't know where – I haven't seen where he is, but
– I think they also need – I mean, they need to there's a few talent deficiencies, I think, for USC defensively too. I don't think it's just scheme.
But, like, Ohio State went out and hired Oklahoma State's defensive coordinator – and they got a lot better on defense. Like, I think you can have quick defensive turnarounds.
Yeah, there's no reason with the talent they have that they should be as bad as they are.
They have three All-Americans.
Yeah, I mean, it's absolutely nuts. So they should be better than they are right now, I think, with a different scheme. But I also think there's something going on with that because Lincoln Riley has always had a defense like that. Like, it's always been like that. So is there something with how he – marries his offense to the defense that causes this issue? Like, is it that they're constantly going up against this offense, and so when they go against different schemes, like, are they bad at creating a scout team environment? Are they bad at certain things because they're running something so unique? You know, that sort of stuff. Yeah. And
Jim Knowles, by the way, that's the defense coordinator Trunks pointed out in the
chat.
Right.
Yeah. So we'll see. But yeah, I think they need to upgrade at defensive coordinator. I think UCLA needs to upgrade at defensive coordinator, and we will see if either program actually ends up doing it.
All right. Well, hey, fun one. We got out of here like more on time for you.
We crushed it.
I think we did.
We murdered the game.
Yeah, so bye-bye. Pac-12 2022 football season.
Yeah.
It's hard to believe.
We had a good run.
I think so. I think it was fun. Like, I love that we added the video element.
Yeah.
Not that people want to see us, which they don't, no. But it's live.
It's live. It's a simulcast.
Simulcast of the...
It's not. It's not.
Thanks to... where's Jockey? Wait, the wrong one. Thanks, Jockey.
It's a simulacrum of a simulcast.
A simulacrum of a simulcast. Okay, sure. I like that. I'll just say simulcast. But the... Jockey was great to us over this. Thanks to my bookie. Fun year. I bought some more Jockey stuff. I'm wearing all that, like the hoodie, super comfortable.
I have nothing but Jockey underwear. The
underwear is all Jockey.
Yeah.
The pants, I got these pants that I didn't even realize they were like, I wear some of the for hiking that they zip off, like their pants. Cause if you go in the morning, it's cold, can zip off the legs and it's shorts later. I didn't even realize I bought those pants. I'm like, oh, they're cool. And I didn't know that they were like that. So some cool Jockey stuff.
Yep.
Yeah. And it's been fun. It's been fun to do these with you.
It's been fun. We've enjoyed it.
All of the 247 publishers, thanks for their help for the whole year. We're doing our year in review, even though it's the new year.
Are we doing a year in review?
No, I'm just like, it's a wrap.
You didn't
prepare
me for this.
It's a wrap. We're just wrapping up.
Well, thank
up
you
the year.
To you, the listener, you, the viewer, and I am speaking singularly because there's just one of you. I'm amazed that guy created 71 accounts to watch this right now. But we appreciate you.
Yeah, thanks for doing that, and we'll keep them going during the off season. I know it'll be a little different, it should be a lot of fun. But for David Woods, I am Ryan Abraham. We are the podcast of champions, always talking all things Pac-12 football. Hope you enjoy the show, and we will talk to you next time.
Podcast of Vegas Bowl champions.